Good morning. So about 7 years ago, I went to General Assembly in Portland, Oregon. And for those of you who don't know, General Assembly is an annual meeting of Unitarian Universalist congregations. And I was fortunate enough to go. I heard a woman speak at a workshop. Her name is Tandy Rogers, and what she said had so much of an impression on me that I wrote to her and asked if she had ever written it down, and if she did, would she send it to me? And she did. I'd like to share those words with you. Tandy said, "I love to make coffee at church. I go and I get the real half and half and the fancy sugars. I get the juice with less sugar and more antioxidants that I call super juice. I'll make the coffee and pray into it. And as people are standing around after church talking about the sermon or the details of their week, I peer out from the kitchen and watch my prayers get sipped up into bodies and spirit. I watch the real half and half delight them, hoping they will in turn make a decadent decision in the world and go beyond what is necessary. I watch the juice mustaches of the children, hoping that their blood sugar levels will remain stable so that they can share what happened in Sunday school with the adults in their lives, rather than melt on the way home. I tend to these details knowing I will not see the results, but I remain faithful to the suspicion, the hope, that they have made a difference. Coffee duty is one of my cherished spiritual practices." I had never, me, Jody, had never thought of coffee service like this. I sat there and I thought, I really had only thought of doing coffee service because it's important, because everybody likes to socialize in coffee hour, and so somebody needs to make the coffee, and I dutifully took my turn. But never once had I thought of coffee like Tandy did. And I have to say very honestly, I pretty quickly came to the conclusion that coffee service will probably never touch me spiritually like it did Tandy. But, excuse me, listening to Tandy's words, it did come to me. I knew with all my heart that while coffee service wasn't one of them, there were ways that I had served that touched me that profoundly. I had led the coming of age group, and I know that I learned more and grew more than the youth did that year. I had served on our ministerial search committee when we were looking for a new minister. In that committee, I had worked hard and laughed hard and learned hard about our congregation, about Unitarian Universalism, about myself. I served on the budget committee, and I learned about the components of fair compensation for our church staff. And that got me interested in economic justice. I listened to Tandy speak, and I knew that I was a deeper, richer, fuller UU and person because I had served. And as I thought of the ways that I had served and grown, I really felt immense gratitude for the opportunity to serve, and gratitude for those who had asked me, because I realized by asking me, they had given me a gift. And then I realized I wanted that for everyone. I wanted everyone to serve in a manner that helped them grow. I didn't want anyone to volunteer to do anything in our congregation that drained them, or even that they were indifferent to. I wanted to give everyone the gift of meaningful service. I wanted everyone to learn and grow and come alive by serving.
Thank you. Ever since people started living in cities, fire has been a major problem. The larger the structures, the closer they are together, the more likely a fire will burn them all down. The Great Fire of London in 1666 was an extreme example of a threat city people must deal with from fire. The ancient Romans were some of the first to come up with using a bucket brigade to put out a fire. Seeing smoke, Marcus Licinius Crassus would show up with 500 men at a house fire. He would assemble them in a long line to the nearest water source, ready to move buckets of water to throw on the fire if the owner would pay him a handsome price to save the house. He made a lot of money. Bucket brigades are still in use today, of course, in underdeveloped parts of the world. But for most of us, we don't do that because we've got hoses and pumps to do the job. Still, submerging in the task, working in a row, and passing the bags along, as Marge Piercy praises in her poem, remains a common labor-saving method for getting work done. Sometimes, as in the case of a fire, the work couldn't be accomplished without the line. The building would burn to the ground before individuals working alone could get enough buckets of water on the fire. They'd just get exhausted running back and forth to the water source to fill their individual bucket. Being part of a bucket brigade and being successful in working together to accomplish the shared goal of putting the fire out can be a very satisfying and meaningful experience for the participants. It is a direct experience of the value of coordinating work for a common end, a sense of community that is mutually supportive. It can be a powerful personal experience of contributing to the good of the whole. Thankfully, it doesn't take a cup brigade to pull off serving coffee on Sunday mornings in Channing Hall after the service. Yet, a coffee hour host can have, as we heard, a powerful personal experience of contributing to the good of the whole. Offering the half and half and the low sugar juice from the story of Tandy Rogers, and seeing that little extra effort making a positive difference gave her a sense of satisfaction. So how many of you have had a similar experience of satisfaction doing coffee hour? Can I see a show of hands? I can see we have a problem here. Alyssa ends up having to, our office administrator ends up having to send out emails midweek to try to rustle people up to do coffee hour. We often have to encourage people to fill in for volunteer spots that we have trouble fulfilling or filling at all. And let me tell you, don't get Leah started on how hard it was last fall trying to fill out all of our teachers in our religious exploration program. So we've got some trouble here. Either there are problems with our volunteer opportunities, or maybe people don't realize what they're missing. I know a little about this lack of appreciation from personal experience. In 1982 and 83, I was attending the Oakland Unitarian Church in Oakland, California. I worked hard all week and just wanted to come Sunday morning for a good sermon, sing a few songs, have some conversation after the service, and go home. That was about it. I was a consumer of Sunday services, and that's all I wanted. And I gave a token contribution. Wasn't involved much beyond that. Then I got invited to go to leadership school, Pacific Central District Leadership School. I went in 1985. And when I came back, I got recruited to be chair of the finance committee. Naively excited and maybe a little deluded with my newfound leadership skills, I said yes. Suddenly, I moved from the edge of the congregation right into the center of activity. And I knew that being on this committee was vitally important because we had a number of financial problems that needed to be resolved. It was meaningful work. Before joining this committee, I hadn't understood where the money comes from, where it goes. I also hadn't realized how important my personal contribution was to making the success of the congregation possible. So I mustered my courage and made a generous contribution to the pledge drive and had an unanticipated feeling of a much deeper connection to being both a generous person, but also supporting the program, the staff, and the success of the congregation and its goals. My sense of ownership of the place increased dramatically. The other powerful experience of making the congregation mine was singing in the choir. That meant a significant time commitment because they had rehearsals on Thursday nights instead of Wednesdays, as we do here. And that extra commitment connected me more deeply in the community. And contributing to the Sunday services, making beautiful music, made the services more meaningful and enjoyable for me. Serving on committees and in the choir made a big difference in how much I was receiving now from my involvement in the congregation. Now I felt like part of the whole. Service fulfills a critical role in Unitarian Universalism. Many of our congregations use words similar to these every Sunday morning. Love is the doctrine of this church, the quest for truth, its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, and to serve one another. Listen to these wise words Unitarian Universalist President Peter Morales put in his September 2010 column in the UU World. If prayer is the word we use to describe the connection to what is sacred, I think service is the best form of prayer. And if the purpose of spiritual practice is spiritual growth, service is a powerful spiritual discipline. I have seen again and again how service transforms people. No one who commits herself to service remains unchanged by the experience. When we serve, we become more compassionate, more sensitive, more understanding, and more aware. We are reminded of how precious and fragile life is. We experience our vulnerability and our deep need for one another. When we serve, we experience what love can do. He goes on to say, in the last few years, I've also come to appreciate how much people need to serve. I saw this clearly among new members joining the congregation I served in Colorado. As part of our new member process, we always asked about activities they wanted to become involved with at church. The congregation was large and active, and they could choose from a broad spectrum of programs. The largest number told us they wanted to become involved in some form of service to the community. And in the last several years, we found that the percentage who said they wanted to get involved in service kept growing. People need to give of themselves. This has certainly been my experience over my years of involvement in UU congregations and as a member and also serving congregations as a minister. Yet I also know that sometimes people's experience of service is not this positive. I recognize the leaders in our congregations have a responsibility to organize those service opportunities well. They need to be organized efficiently so people's effort is productive of results and not wasted. They need to be organized meaningfully to provide work that has value and uses or develops people's skills and contributes to their growth and development. And finally, it needs to be sustainable so no one person carries too much of the load and new people are being prepared to receive the handoff of the work when the current worker is ready to step aside. Too often, organizations are happy to add new activities without deciding what old activities to stop doing. We are extremely careful. Let me tell you how extremely careful we are. We are extremely careful about budgeting our money. We do not take that same care in budgeting volunteer time. People are willing to stretch in giving time and money when needed, only up to a point. And then fatigue sets in. Solving these problems is what the Growth Through Service program is all about. It's a program that several of us heard about at General Assembly last June in Providence, Rhode Island. Jody is one of the visionaries of this program, chief visionaries. Happy to have her here. She came Friday and Saturday to work with us to begin to adapt her congregation's vision of this program to our congregation. The driving purpose of the Growth Through Service program is making service opportunities in our congregation efficient, meaningful, and sustainable. What many congregations neglect is the meaningful part, particularly making the service opportunity one that helps stimulate our growth and development. Growth and development is the religious and spiritual component that equips us to fulfill our congregation's mission, which is to seek truth and deeper meaning, to pursue justice through inspired action, and cultivate compassion and love for all connected in the web of life. To accomplish that mission, we need to grow and develop as individuals. To accomplish that mission, we need to serve each other. We need to serve the larger community around us, and we need to serve the world community of life on this planet. Our Unitarian and Universalist ancestors received that direction to serve others from Jesus. In the book of Matthew, Jesus was very clear. A mother comes to Jesus and asks how her sons and what they can do to be on Jesus' right and left hand sides, to be Jesus's lieutenant, as he is the commander. This was and is the way of hierarchical power in the world. She saw Jesus as a Messiah who would be king, and wanted her sons to get in on the action. Jesus was clear that he would not be a king. Not be a king. Luke reports these words for him for this story. It is the kings who lord it over everyone, and those in power are addressed as benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, the greatest among you must behave as a beginner, and the leader as one who serves. Among you, I am the one doing the serving. Swedenborg, the 18th century Lutheran mystic, whom Emerson found much inspiration, had a vision of God, who would guide all of us towards service as a way of discovering wisdom and practicing compassion. Through service, we could have a direct experience of God's true nature, which he believed was identical with love and wisdom. Yet a love of service isn't bound by any means to a belief in God. Bette Chambers, former president of the American Humanist Association, wrote, "All human life must seek a reason for existence within the bounds of an uncaring physical world, and it is love, coupled with empathy, democracy, and a commitment to selfless service, which undergirds the faith of a humanist. Humanists focus on the welfare of humanity rather than on the commandment of God. Since humanists cannot depend on supernatural forces to deal with the world's problems, it is their responsibility. Human effort must be put forth to meet human needs. People can find purpose and happiness in life by developing their talents and using those talents in the service of humanity." Whether our value of service comes from serving God or serving the good of humanity, it is imperative that service opportunities here have at least two purposes. The first is the good of the whole, be it the congregation or the whole of community. The second is the good of the individual, contributing to the individual's growth and development, meaning and satisfaction. Both must be in balance with each other. And that takes careful intention that drives the growth through service program we are striving to introduce here in our congregation. So, if you're serving coffee on Sunday morning or at the reception for a memorial service, greeting people as they come in, ushering them to a free seat, following up with visitors to better understand how we can serve their needs, organizing a service auction to help raise funds needed to support our mission, advocating at the Capitol for legislative change in alignment with our UU values, reading to students at Sheridan Preparatory Academy just a few blocks away, teaching children how to make a worm bin or compost, how to reduce, reuse, and recycle, teaching adults how to resolve interpersonal conflicts nonviolently, joining together to make beautiful music and song, balancing our financial budget lines, or even defrosting the freezer. All of them can be experiences structured to stimulate growth and development, to be genuinely meaningful and satisfying, and to serve needs greater than our own. May this vision of service inspire us to make all we do here coordinate with our congregational purposes, and to have the courage and the wisdom to stop doing what doesn't. We don't want anyone, as Jody mentioned earlier, we don't want anyone to burn out or